Good morning and welcome. This is Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is the beginning of the building universal Windows apps with C# and XAML. Let's actually say it's developing universal Windows apps with C# and XAML. I'm Jerry Nixon. I'm here with Darren. And this is going to be a good 2 days, Darren.
Yep, really looking forward to it.
I am too.
Been a while since we've been here.
It's been a little while, but it's always fun when we are here. And there's a lot to talk about. There's a lot to share. And this will be an exciting MVA. But let's get started with kind of who we are. And let's start with me, Darren.
It's all about you.
In this case, it is. So hi, I'm Jerry Nixon, and like Darren, I am from Colorado, as you can tell by my accent.
Yeah, I am indeed native.
I work for Microsoft as a Microsoft developer evangelist, which means I work with students and professional developers talking about our platform and working with them to get training and pieces like that. I talk a lot about Windows Phone, a lot about Windows, which is perfect for an MVA on Universal Apps. And specifically, I talk a lot about XAML. If you want to find me online, it's jerrynixon.com, where I blog with abandon. And at Jerry Nixon is my Twitters, so you can reach out to us there.
It's generally a good rule of thumb that you do, in fact, just talk a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I joke that I get paid by the word, but it's true.
It is true, yeah. The peanut gallery is rowdy.
Barry, you're supposed to be totally quiet.
Yeah, I thought you were talking about the veil. Okay.
Yeah, where's the fourth wall?
Exactly.
Come on, people.
So, hi, guys. I'm Darren May. I'm president and co-founder of company Crank 211. We're based in Colorado. We build a lot of interesting software on the Windows and other platforms. And we like to think that we build products with a business mind, technology muscle, and a creative soul. I was also awarded Windows Platform Developer MVP this year based upon some of the work that I was doing with Jerry.
Congratulations.
The MVA products and so on, so that's pretty interesting. As I say, we do a wide range of different technologies, but we really sort of focus on the highly designed products, which is why XAML and Universal Projects really appeal to us.
Exactly. All right, so let's kind of just step back, get a lay of the land, and see what's going on next.
Okay, so let's set some expectations. You know, what's the target audience for this particular MVA?
Well, I would say that if you're a current Microsoft developer writing your own Windows application, or you're a current Microsoft developer writing your own Windows Phone application, then certainly you would be a perfect candidate for this course, because this is not a XAML training course, right? And the reason it's not is, Darren, we've already done it.
We've done many. We started off with the C# Foundation. Then we ran through the Essentials for Windows Store app development. Then we moved into the advanced Windows Stores for app development, where we really talked about all the detailed contracts and some of the more advanced features you can incorporate in it. And you yourself have done another MVA on using Blend.
Just an all day with Blend. That's exactly right. So if you're watching this and you're thinking to yourself that, great, Universal Apps, finally I'm going to learn how to do XAML. There are courses for that, and this is really going to be a dovetail to those. And so there's going to be a lot of things we move into with just an assumption that you know how these things work. And we're not silly about that. We know these things are complicated, and we know that you need to learn them as well. That's why we provided those previous courses. So this will be an exciting one. I kind of want to say, too, that the purpose of this course, right? If we're not teaching XAML, we're not teaching C#, what is it we're teaching? And in a lot of ways, we're teaching like the approach.
Yeah, it's optimal strategies from our experience that you could leverage to build great universal apps.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of the things we're going to show off here in a little bit is we have an app that we've put together, and that app is really us making sure that what we're about to tell you can really be done, right? I mean, that was important because there's a part of it where we're like, is that even true? And sometimes it is true if you sidestep a little bit, right? And there's things that we've learned along the way. So what we'll hopefully be able to give you in this MVA is a lot of guidance that's also real world guidance.
Yeah, it's pragmatic. It's tempered by actual experience of leveraging it. You know, we built solutions on this technology, and this is kind of refining some of those experiences into just, it's not empirically specific, you know, you must do this and so on and so forth. It is recommendations. It is some guidelines around from our experience.
Yep. There you go. All right. Let's do some housekeeping on the MVA side here. The if you're watching this live, congratulations. One of the benefits of watching live, two things actually. We'll do something special here at the end of this day so that we can kind of talk to you directly. You can use the chat that's there. We have some subject matter experts that are in the chat room right now. And you can interact with those guys with questions that you have. One of the most common questions is this going to be available or is it going to be recorded for later use? Of course it is. In about a week or two, you're going to have it so that you can have it and pause it, rewind it, whatever it is that you need to do.
Just in case you can't understand Jerry's accent.
Just in case my accent is throwing you off. That's right.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable.
The other thing is you get to earn credits. So you get 50 MVA points with our Dev Univ Win App C1.
Just rolls off the tongue.
I'd say that. Straight off marketing naming conventions. That's really awesome.
Voucher one, people. Voucher one.
Voucher one, that's right. And so that's another benefit of watching this live as well. And so that'll be exciting. We've got a lot of users on MVA. And just to step back for a second and talk about MVA, MVA is a huge resource for you as a developer. It doesn't only focus on Microsoft technologies, but it certainly covers them. And if you're looking for training that's totally free and it's online just like this one is, there's tons and tons and tons of courses all the way from the IT pro side all the way through web development, XAML, and everything else that you need. So don't miss out on MVA and the stuff that that officer offers.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get a snapshot of where we're going today and tomorrow.
Okay, a quick sort of overview of the course topics. So in general, we're going to be talking about building universal Windows apps, introducing the concept of what they do, how you approach design. Then we're going to run through our Solarize a sort of preview proof of concept application.
Yep.
Then we're going to talk about building services and how we are leveraging those.
Every application has data, and so this is us talking about how you would incorporate that.
And then we do a sort of pseudo deep dive, I would say, into Prism in terms of introducing Prism, the challenges that Prism is addressing, and why we think it's a useful idea to incorporate something like this into your application.
A pseudo deep dive?
Yeah.
Is that a shallow dive?
It's almost deep, but not deep enough.
Ah, I get it. It's just enough where you're treading, but every once in a while your feet touch the bottom. Got it. And then tomorrow we'll roll into security, local data, communications, all the view services that we've built, and kind of talk about some of the advanced features and even things that we considered but didn't necessarily need to build for this MVA, but that you might also consider for the app that you're building as well. So tomorrow will be a real exciting day, especially from an architectural point of view. We'll talk about things in concept and deal with them kind of that Q&A piece. Will show up at the end of the day tomorrow, but we'll also have the Q&A piece at the end of the day today. And so we'll, if you have a bunch of questions that you're putting into the chat room, great. Those guys can really answer your questions for you. But if you have a couple key ones that you want to ask us directly, we'll interact with you at the end of the day. Sound all right?
Sounds good. I mean, in general, what we're going to be doing is proceeding through these modules and taking like a 10-minute break between each of those modules. So if you're live, please stay with us throughout the day. It's going to be an interesting story.
A lot of developers might be wondering if they can get their hands on this code that we're putting together, and the answer is obviously yes. We're going to wrap all this up and put it out on CodePlex, just like we have with all our other MVAs. And so we'll take that and put it on xaml.codeplex.com, where you can go and get that. And if you just kind of browse through the tree there, you'll see there's all the other MVAs we have, as well as all the samples from my blog. I put those there as well. So there's a lot of information for, really for XAML developers. A lot of candy there.
It's almost as... The clue is in the name.
Almost like the clue is in the name. All right, I'm going to switch over, and that was kind of our introduction. Yeah. Let's kind of roll into this first module of what we're going to talk about, and it's really the idea of the promise of universal apps. So before we start opening Visual Studio, we should probably talk about what a universal app really is. And so we're going to step through all the different perspectives, and because not everybody thinks the same about what a universal app is. And then there we start talking about what we've introduced inside Visual Studio and some approaches to sharing code that developers can use very practically. So we're going to have Visual Studio open plenty. So we'll start with the promise, and we'll start with just what a universal app is, and we'll start with our perspective. And we certainly mean, at the beginning, that you can build an app that targets Windows and Windows Phone. And I think if you leave the definition at just that, that's a good start.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. It's somewhat an overloaded term once you move outside of the Windows technology stack. You know, there are other technologies that have universal apps and so on and so forth. We're talking purely and simply about the universal apps on the Windows platform.
Right. And I think from a developer point of view, there's going to be a lot of options for you to say, oh, but it also is this. Let's talk about what it's not. Mm-hmm. It is not a single binary. And so inside the Microsoft world, we have two platforms to consider. We are building one for phone, and we're building one for Windows. And no matter what you do, as universal as you want to get, even if everything is one like solid code base, you're still going to build it out, one for phone and one for Windows Phone. So we're not talking about a single binary.
And even within the context of a Windows application, you might be targeting 86 processor or the ARM for Windows RT.
That's right. It could be even multiple on the individual platforms. That's right. We also are not talking about universal outside of the Microsoft platform. I think it's reasonable to say a universal app runs everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's a pretty big dream. And it can be sort of a reality if you jump through quite a few hoops. Those are not the hoops we're jumping through today. We're really talking about the universal app inside the Microsoft
ecosystem.
Thank you. Yes, that's right. So, Xamarin is a great solution if you're going to cross-compile directly to, say, iOS or to Android. Mm-hmm. That's not what we're doing today. This is purely what's inside Visual Studio and in the mechanisms for Microsoft developers inside our ecosystem.
Yep. And we're also not going to be talking about the HTML and JavaScript alternatives to building these types of applications, you know, perhaps using the Cordova application framework and so on and so forth.
Right. Certainly, Cordova tools for Visual Studio have been released, and people are building those sorts of apps. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not what we're talking about today. So what are we talking about? Let's pretend we're users, right? The worst part of software development is certainly the user. The user has a few ideas of
what the opportunity to excel.
Yes. They do. The universal app, if you're a user, is basically this. The app that I'm using on my phone, or the app that I'm using on my tablet, or the app that I'm using on my desktop all feel like the same experience. They have a similar theme, they look the same, they interact the same, and perhaps more importantly, all of my data is the same as well. So I authenticate with one. I don't have a separate password for when I go to my phone. It's the same experience there. But I also, it asks me my favorite football team. I say that it's mm-hmm. the Broncos. I go to my phone. It doesn't ask again because it's sharing all
of
that
across. Yeah, your preferences are shared across the devices.
That's awesome. Right. Maybe even more importantly, as a user, I don't feel this ripoff of, what if I go to the phone and I buy an app, and then I go over to the desktop for the exact same app? Do I have to buy it the second time? I think the user's expectation is no. They get it. Once you buy it, you bought it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a great evolution of this approach, you know, having this reach across all the devices. And you know, we hope to see it extend over future platforms as well.
Yeah, that's right. And it will. We know that it will.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Hint, hint, wink, wink. So one thing I think the user isn't saying is that the app has to be identical. We really are just talking about a general experience, but certainly we as developers know we would tailor it for the individual device, but the user knows that as well. They know that their phone enjoys the portrait orientation, you know, mm-hmm. naturally, and they know that their tablet is larger, and so there's nothing about tailoring the experience that's out of that, right? They expect it to be perfect for the device that they're on, but still feel like it's the same.
Well, imagine if you were trying to present the tablet interface in the phone in its portrait orientation. You'd be scrolling an awful lot to the right to be able to bring content into view. That's not a practical experience to expect your users to do on that phone device. And so you know, think through what their experience is going to be and base your designs and implementations around that.
Yeah. You don't want to make your user hate your application.
It seems unwise.
So that's from the user's perspective, right? They just basically, it's one application just happens to be showing up in different spots, right? That's the great. The store thinks about it slightly differently.
It does, and it's an evolution.
It really is. Today, the way that the Windows Store looks at this is that there's an application running on Windows, and there's an app, well, let me not say running. There's an application in the phone store, and there's an application in the Windows Store, and they share the same package full name. Mm-hmm. You could almost stop there. That's almost what they think, right? Just that. They certainly enable the ability to purchase the app and all the in-app purchases so that you do them in one store and you get them free in the other as well. So that's not duplicated as well. That's the way the store thinks about it. And the store will also enable roaming data, and they'll also enable this single channel for notifications as well. Mm-hmm. The store doesn't care about the theme, right?
Nope.
It doesn't care if it looks the same. They could be absolutely different. The user experience could be different. I could authenticate with two different passwords. The store still sees this as a universal app. They really yes. care about one thing, and is that link between the two different Windows and Windows Phone store. I'm excited for the day, and no doubt it's coming when the stores all converge. But the way we are today, there's two stores, and they're connected by package full name.
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
All right, let's go through a quick demo here of the way that you would add the two applications to the store and see how that goes. Let's hope our internet connectivity stays on.
All right. Nice. Hey. Bing slide.
Yeah, this is the...
Doesn't look like my Bing slide.
That's the banana slug. All right, first things first. Let's go to the store. Let's go to the developer dashboard. So dev.windows.com. I'll go into the dashboard and specifically go to the Windows Store. See, there's two choices because right now there are two stores. So let's begin with the Windows Store and just submit our first app. So I'll go into submit app. This is how all the process begins. And as we submit a first app, the way that we identify this app is by reserving its name. So let me go straight into the application name. And I'm going to need to pick a unique name, not only for all the apps that are in the store today, but all the apps that are also submitted but maybe haven't been released. So this is 100%. Let's see. What should we name it?
Galactic Attack, I think, is a good name.
All right. Galactic Attack. Very good. All right.
Are you typing with your elbows, man?
That's right. All right. Yeah, so the first thing I do is I reserve the name. It goes out and does all this searching for me to make sure that it's not used. And from that point forward, it's locked. And if we don't submit the app over a certain amount of time, it'll eventually release it. But as of right now, nobody can create an app called Galactic Attack. Nothing to stop anybody from creating Galactic Attack Pro. All right, so this is release one. There's a lot more we would need to do to get this ready for launch, but we've at least created the record inside the Windows Store. So now let's jump over to the phone store, or not the store, but the dashboards. So same as before, dev.windows.com. I'll click on dashboard, and it's going to assume that I'm still inside the Windows Store. So I'll just swap over to the Windows Phone Store here.
So that's the integration story is definitely coming together now.
Yeah, you can really start to see it right here. And so here's just like on the other, you click on Submit App. It looks slightly different, but for the most part, the workflow is identical. So I'll go into App Info where I can type in the name of the app, but I'm not going to type in the name of the app. Instead, I'm just going to do a drop down, and it's going to show me the app in the Windows Store.
Well, which is handy.
That is handy. So I select it, and as soon as I do, I get this warning dialogue. It's not really a warning. It's more of a conversation dialogue. It's very interesting. It says, let's pause for a moment and review. And it's basically saying, look, users who buy this on the phone, they get it in Windows. Users who buy in-app purchases on Windows get it on the phone and vice versa. And then finally, you get that roaming data. So if you think back of what we were talking about. And so now I don't reserve the name. I associate the app. From that point forward, it gets the package identity name that matches what's over in the Windows Store. And these two are now linked together. Buying one gives the other one for free. That's basically it.
Yeah.
But let me show you one other thing. So I'm going to go ahead and set up this app inside the category that I want it to. And it's going to be Games Platformer, right? So we haven't built this game out yet, but that's
yeah. Don't get too excited. You're not going to see a video game.
And I'm going to price it at 99 cents. That's important too. So think about that, and I'll go back to the Windows Store and show you how these things sort of
correlate
to it. Yeah, and correlate them, because setting the price here doesn't automatically set the price in the Windows Store as well. So the internet's kind of slow for us here. All right. I'm going to go to the Windows Store now, and I'll add the first durable in-app purchase to our application. So let me swap back over here. And actually, let me set up the pricing first. So I'll go into the selling details, and it'll ask how much it's going to cost. Now, look, I could pick anything here. And this would be kind of a weird setup where I go to the tablet and my application costs 99 cents, I go to the phone and it's free. Or I go, you know, or it's more expensive.
Tablet's premium because you've got more screen.
Yeah, you don't want to do that because regardless of the pricing tier you pick, the app, the store they're going through, they'll get that pricing tier, but it'll be free on the other. So it probably makes sense for you to be able to make those in sync. So here's the category. Remember, it was games platformer. So I'll click games and look.
Oh, so that these aren't consolidated yet.
Yeah, they're really close, but you're going to find these occasional situations where you as a developer are going to need to make a decision. So in my decision, none.
Good one.
Yeah, there you go. Hey, you can't be undone. But
lowest possible thought involved.
This is really how they're categorized inside the unique stores on the devices. And as things come together, more things will too.
Yeah, right? But the key thing is this does not break the association.
It doesn't at all. Speaking of association, though, let's create Hyperboost. That's going to be, I'm just dreaming this up. This is going to be an in-app purchase that I'm setting up for just the Windows app. It's 99 cents, doubles the value of the app.
So with this, I better be able to rule the game. If I've got to pay as much as I paid for the game for this.
This isn't lame boost. This is Hyperboost.
This
is going to be incredible. All right, so I just saved it. I have my first in-app purchase. Let's jump over to the phone store, do the exact same thing. Now, remember what we did when we created the name of the app.
And we had a nice drop-down?
We had a nice drop-down, yeah. Well, unfortunately, we're not going to have that this time. So let's go into the Galactic Attack, and I'll see the products inside that. So let me click on that and add an in-app purchase. So my in-app purchase is going to need a name, so I'll paste in Hyperboost. And it's important that I paste it in because, look, there's no drop-down, and so I need those
and
to be
and there's no verification.
There's no verification either, right? It's up to me as a developer to make sure my in-app purchase items are all named the same.
It's clearly something that's going to improve.
Clearly something that's going to improve, yeah. But this is the way it is today, as well as pricing. And so, again, they could arbitrage between the two and pick which one is cheaper, but you don't want to make this a research project for your user. You want to make this an enjoyable game. Whichever they're on, they just buy it. And so now I've created the in-app purchase, and it's called Hyperboost. That Hyperboost string is important. It's in both projects, both stores, exactly the same. I could buy the app in Windows, then I could buy the in-app purchase in phone, and I would have both on both platforms. Make sense to you?
Makes perfect sense to me.
All right. Buy a universal app on Windows, and it's available on phone with no additional purchase. That's a really important tenet, and let's kind of look at what do we get with this universal app? That's the first one. We also get buy an in-app entitlement or an in-app purchase on Windows, and it's, again, available with no additional purchase. This meets the expectation of the user, and it's delivered by the store as well. Yeah. Finally, register a push notification channel on Windows and phone. It's a single channel. It used to be that you would have two different channels, and from a server, when you would push that notification, you'd have to send two. One to make sure they got it on the phone, one to make sure that they got it on Windows, and you don't want it. And then data itself roams between it. So as they set up their profile, as they set up their preferences, as they get a high score, All that information is saved between it. And it's not necessary that you use the cloud or use Azure or anything like that, because
it's
now
part of the core infrastructure.
The core infrastructure will roam it between the devices.
Yeah, you always had on the Windows Store the roaming profile if you logged onto multiple Windows devices, but now it's extended across the two platforms between Windows and Windows Phone.
Remember our previous MVA, we had the OneDrive demo, And we would build all this infrastructure so that you could save it up to OneDrive and then go over to phone and you could use that same data.
Right? Yep, I have to say it was a little bit hokey, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it got the job done. It wasn't awesome.
Yeah,
this
is awesome, and it just works.
Yeah, and it really does. That's what's great about it. All right. That was from the store's perspective. There's a third
Easy
perspective.
For you to say.
Yeah. There's a third perspective, and that's the Visual Studio perspective. What does Visual Studio consider a universal app?
That's a good question.
It is. And I'll demo it here in just a second. But what we've really done is introduced as of Visual Studio 2013 Update 2, which was the same time that we launched Windows Phone 8.1, which was the beginning of all the universal business. We introduced the shared project. And so the shared project, which we'll demo it here, really is how Visual Studio starts to see, this is universal. Because now we're reusing code. Now we have everything in one place. Now fixing a bug in Windows fixes the bug in Windows Phone. that's where it really sees.
That's where it really starts to facilitate.
Its perspective, right. It still doesn't take away the opportunity to tailor the experience.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think any of these take away the opportunity to tailor the experience. And if you feel like building a universal app is building a single UI, you've really thought about it wrong. Because building a single experience, absolutely a single theme, that's really great. But one, trying to get it pixel perfect and then just letting that roll into phone, let's say,
yeah.
There's going to be something there that's not.
There's a lot of opportunities missed if that's the approach that you take. We're really not talking about just making everything identical and taking the easy route from a development path.
Yeah, that's right. Also from the developer side is the unification of APIs. Mm-hmm. So not just am I sharing code, but the only way I can really, to make that meaningful, is the APIs that that code is calling out to are universal or converged, let's say, mm-hmm. on each of the two platforms. So Windows has, Windows dot something, something, something. I can go over to phone. I can do the exact same thing. Windows dot something, something, something. And we know now that those have converged, so we can share more and more code. Not 100%. There are going to be things around the edges on Windows that are only for Windows. Things around the edge for phone that are only for phone.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So as we said, it's about, I don't know, throwing a number out is sort of hokey.
Yeah.
But
this
Windows
is the
runtime,
number that's in use.
This is the number that yeah, exactly. About 90% converge. Not just the runtime API, but also all the supporting SDKs that are out there. So as you start using the Azure SDK, the Bing SDK, all these different pieces, they're all coming together to support this universal model. Most of them do now.
Mm-hmm.
And even in preparation for this MVA, we were kind of...
We were leapfrogging,
yeah,
yeah.
Preparing and waiting for the SDKs to be available than they were, and it was great. So
yep.
We had actually scheduled this a handful of weeks ago, and now we have it today. Thank goodness we did. We have that much more.
We have a much more coverage now that's universal. So we're talking about NuGet packages and those kind of things that are actually intrinsically support the idea of universal projects so that we can install them at a solution level rather than having to go and cherry pick different NuGet packages for each of the targets. There are still some that are out there that target the C++ runtime and so on that are much more tightly coupled to the platform. But we'll talk about those as we go through.
Yeah. Can I do a demo real quick?
Why not?
Let me see here. I am going to demo just the different types of how you would see Universal Projects in Visual Studio. So I think of them as two. One is kind of a mixed and one is a shared. And I'll show you what I mean. Let me open up Visual Studio here. And we'll start from scratch. I'll say new project. And you'll see we have the new Universal Apps option here where I can choose a blank app in the Universal node. And that basically means it will create both Windows Phone and Windows together, right? So we'll do that later. I don't want to do that just yet. I want to instead start with, what if I have just a Windows Phone application? We have 300 and some thousand apps in the Windows Phone store.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a real scenario where you might have an application and you want to now move it towards the universal model. So to make it even more interesting, let's use the Silverlight Windows Phone project. So that certainly represents a bulk of all of the applications in the phone store today. And so I can pick between the two, Windows 8.1 or Windows 8.0. Both of those are going to be Silverlight, because mm-hmm. Silverlight supports all the way up, no doubt about it. And part of the reason for that is we respect the investment that you've already put into this, right? We can't just throw that away. And so we understand that that's the way it goes. And so if you have a Silverlight application on the phone, this would kind of be the beginning of the process you would use. And all right, so here we are. I have Windows Phone 8.0. And the first thing I can do is retarget it to Windows Phone 8.1. I just want to show that upgrade path, first of all. Maybe you don't want to do a universal project at all. Maybe all you really want to do is just get access to all the latest APIs. No problem. You can retarget an existing one. It's probably worth saying you should back up your project before you do that.
Yeah, sometimes you may have some idiosyncrasies in your code that it can't upgrade for you.
I only say back up your project for those developers who aren't using source code control, right?
Yep.
And if you don't have source control, then you are, it's too bad.
You're missing
right?
an opportunity.
Not to mention Visual Studio Online is free for you. So, I mean, there's no harm in doing it. All right, so here we are. I have just the Silverlight application. How am I going to create a universal style app? Well, the reality is, These APIs are different, and there are only so many things that can be shared between them. And so let me go and add a new project, and I'll go to Windows app, and I'm going to add just a Windows application, nothing else. So now I've got two apps side by side. They're going to have unique XAML all the way through. The projects are not shared between them. I couldn't go to reference one or the other. Mm-hmm. They're completely incompatible. So what's great is also an update to a Visual Studio 2013. We introduced the, in fact, let me pull it up here. We introduced a portable, there it is. The class library portable for universal apps. This is basically a PCL, a portable class library.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Strange how that correlates.
Yeah, that's beautiful. But it's extended now so that, this is new, it's extended now so that it supports calling out to those WinRT APIs, which weren't originally available. So I'll go ahead and add this. I'm just going to leave it called Class Library 1 for now. So now my project has, or now my solution has three projects in it. And if you look at how it's set up, not assembly information, but I support Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. Now, Windows Phone 8.1 is basically how we refer to the WinRT version of Phone. That's not what we have here. We have Silverlight. And so I can go Windows Phone 8.1 Silverlight right here. I can take this one off or leave it, whichever I want. And this basically dumbs down is the wrong word, but it
uses the lowest common denominator between the two platforms.
That's right, to make sure that neither overwrites the other. That certainly means some of your implementations inside that class library are going to be limited. But it also means now you can start writing code that's shared between them. So now I can go into the phone project and add a quick solution reference to class library. So now the code that I use inside that PCL, and I can do the exact same thing inside Windows class library, right? Great. So this, I mean, it's weird to think about this as a universal project, but this really is the beginning. I do have shared code between them. I can have universal logic or shared logic that each of them get, even though they're cross, not just cross-platform, but even cross-technology.
Yeah, so this really outlines an incremental strategy that you can employ to start moving existing code into this new world of universal.
That's exactly right. Yeah, well summarized there. Let me show you the other. So let's, this may be better for kind of a greenfield scenario where you're starting from scratch, but let's say right now I'm about to build an app and I want to make sure it's universal. So I'll go into, I'll just create a blank app so we can see all the basics. But I picked it right off the universal node, and we'll save what's there, but that was just kind of fun. And it will create all the projects for us. So you can see there's three projects inside this solution, nicely nested inside a little solution folder for us.
With a nice naming convention as well. It's a lot bit better than App 23, Class Library, and your phone project.
Yeah, you're right. It did try to make me better. Visual Studio makes me want to be a better man.
Compiler, fail.
Why won't this build? All right. But let's look at what it is. So now we have a shared project, and here's something interesting. So the shared project is much like the PCL for the phone and for Windows. Let's be clear, though. When we look at phone here, this is not a Silverlight project. This is the WinRT project. So there's a Windows, of course, is a WinRT project specifically targeting the Windows platform. Windows Phone is a WinRT project specifically targeting Windows Phone. And we refer to those as head projects. Mm-hmm. And I guess that makes shared sort of the tail project, I guess, body project, something like that.
It certainly is the shared project.
Yeah. And so if you look it up, there's nothing there, right? It starts off completely empty. But if we look at the references, let's say in the phone project, you can see that the shared project is referenced. And if you look at Windows inside, it also has a shared project as well. So the shared project rolls up. And is it a binary way of sharing? It's not.
So it looks like the class library reference, except it's got a different icon on there.
It does. It has these two little, like, diamonds that are together, right? Mm-hmm. It's you know what? It's like a Venn diagram.
It is. It's an intersection. You suddenly got it.
At this moment, dun, 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 we have to have a new MBA.
Yeah. You got that live. Jerry's just had a realization.
Oh, my gosh. I just figured something out.
Yeah.
I'm so proud of myself.
I know.
All right, so.
He's all smug now.
Now, if I right-click the Windows project, and I can select build, and of course that builds the project for Windows. I can do the exact same thing for Windows Phone and build. What happens if I right-click the shared project?
Exercising disappointment if you're trying to build it.
There's no build, right, exactly. I can't build it. The reason is the shared project is not a binary at all.
It's not an assembly.
It's not an assembly. What it really is a holder. It's almost like a container. Mm-hmm. And it works in very similar to how linked files work, where it exists in one location, but it's used in different locations.
Yeah, it's a logical grouping of source files that allows it to automate the integration of those into those other projects.
In fact, this is the here it is in File Explorer. You can see it has project items, and if I were to open up project items, it would actually be it would be the MS build syntax of the files that get rolled into the head project. So as I do right click Windows and I say build, what's really occurring is MS build is executing behind the scenes, pulling all of those files in, making them local inside the head just for a moment, builds out the assembly for me. And then I get all of those files as if they were local. There's a little bit of a benefit here because those files are treated as if they're actually in that project. They are completely in scope. They can access all the same resources. It really is just like having it there. However,
and you get compiler errors that relate to that project and that use in context.
That's right. If I were to put an error inside this file, that's the one and only one that's shared here, it would be a build error on the two heads. That's exactly right. One more thing that's interesting. Inside this shared, I can start adding anything. And I think that's the right word to say. Mm-hmm. Anything. This really is MS Build just rolling those files up into the heads for us. And so if I need to put my, in this case, you can see XAML files. If I need to put my my C# files, if I need to put my images, if I need to put my resource files, there's no limit to it. Put anything that you want with only one exception. And we'll get to this later, but Visual Studio has built-in T4 templates for code generation. That's the one exception, and it's mostly because they use MS Build as well.
Yes.
And it's an order thing.
The task that generates the T4 executes before or after the copy, but not in this scenario.
Right. And so it doesn't. All the resulting files from the T4 execution don't show up in the head.
Yeah. Which is unfortunate.
That's the only limit that I've found. There may be one or two others, but that
really
is the
main. I'm sure something will be addressed in future versions.
Yeah, and so in this, you can see there's a main page in both heads. If I wanted to, I could delete both of those and create a single main page. In fact, let me just do it real quick.
Why not?
I'll delete it from phone.
Take a walk on the wild side.
Yeah, I'll delete it from phone. And here I'll just move it down to the shared. And let me move it back real quick. And so I have main page in Windows. And if I do a quick build, I'll have a failure, but the only failure I'll have is in the Windows Phone project, right? Mm-hmm. Failure, I
say. Failure, yeah.
Yeah.
That's an interesting accent you have there.
Yeah, it's because I'm from Australia. I thought you would have recognized it.
Good day, Bruce.
But if I drag this down into shared, if I copy it down into shared, there's going to be a conflict. I have a main page up here and I have a main page down here. Now if I build it, Windows Phone won't give me any trouble, but now Windows will give me a trouble saying that there's already a file named it. So I'll delete them both and now they're shared. So, interesting, you can't have the same XAML in both the shared and the...
Well, because if you're copying it in from the shared, it's going to obliterate the one that's in the target.
So well, you would think so, wouldn't you? You would think with the same file name, it would just overwrite the head, but that's not what happens. As mm-hmm. soon as it finds that conflict or a clashing of names, it just renames it so that you can have both of them side by side. Now, all of a sudden, you have two XAMLs with the same everything.
Exactly.
And we all know that won't work anyway. If you didn't know that wouldn't work, we have an MVGA dedicated to XAML that you can go back and look at. It's pretty great. All right. I'm done. I just wanted to show kind of what the experience was here inside Visual Studio. We can share code in a non-universal sense just by using PCLs, right? And then we've mm-hmm. kind of been doing that for a long time to kind of pull code out so it's testable and
yeah,
stuff
PCLs,
like that.
PCLs, portable class libraries.
Portable class libraries. But now we have this new shared project that allows us to write code, and then it just gets moved into those projects. I'm showing it with WinRT XAML projects, but the shared project is actually available for .NET and everything else as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's an interesting paradigm that people have been asking for, I think, for quite some time as we've developed more and more abstractions that pull out these implementations that we want to reuse, both client-side, server-side, and so on and so forth. What's the optimal way to do it?
Yeah. And don't be fooled is one thing to say. So when I create a portable class library, the new one today, I could have put XAML in there just as much as I put XAML in the shared project. And you might think, perfect then, I won't use the shared project. But just because you have a XAML file inside a PCL doesn't mean it's in scope for the head project. Yep. So there's a lot of work around it. When you put it inside a shared project, it just rolls into your project for you. All right, let's see. Where were we?
It's kind of a recap on what universal apps are.
And just like before, universal apps really haven't changed. They still support C Sharp. They still support, well, all the managed languages, Visual Basic, .NET, and C Sharp. I just didn't want to type VB.NET. I just didn't.
Your fingers got caught.
Yeah, I'm starting to type. What are you doing? Don't do it. But anyway, Visual Basic, .NET, C Sharp, C++.
All those Norwegian VB developers are hating you right now.
They are. Oh my gosh, that is the haven of Visual Basic, isn't it? They pronounce it differently.
Yeah.
But in Australia, it's still just Visual Basic. Windows Phone, Silverlight, and Windows apps can share the same package family name. We didn't mention this, but inside the phone store, I can release my app, and it's a Silverlight app. Inside the Windows store, I can release my app, and it's the new WinRT app. And they can still have that shared name. And the reason is the store doesn't freaking care.
Yeah, it's just data to the store. And so the reality is that allows you to make sure you still share in-app purchases and those kind of capabilities as well. So you really extend that experience across. As we say, it's a stepping stone. Obviously, the future is going to be leveraging the WinRT APIs and so on and so forth, but it stops you having to boil the ocean to ship a new version of your product on this new frame.
Yeah, we demonstrated how you can take existing Windows 8 apps and you can migrate those up, and all the tooling is there to make that as easy as possible. Definitely good to have source control or back up your code before that you actually execute that. And that's about it. I mean, this is really, we needed to see this from a high level and be able to get a feel for what all the different perspectives are before we start. It's almost like defining your terms right before an argument.
Yep.
And so if we think about it, we have the universal promise, the promise we give to consumers. The consumers have this dream that everything is the same and it's the same app.
It should be
across
transparent
devices.
You know, our technical implementation approach should be irrelevant to the end users. They just want to purchase once and run it across all their plethora of devices. Because let's face it, who has just one these days?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even more importantly, they don't care about the technical issues at all, mm-hmm. right? They only want to have this great experience. And honestly, this is, they get it, right? Yeah. Over on other types of devices and other platforms, this is the experience they're beginning to get used to as well. And so, I mean, we want to be able to meet their expectations, basically.
Yeah. And it's also a migratory strategy. Now, we're in the first kind of iterations of universal projects on top of this technology base. And so there are some gaps where there's an opportunity for you to make a mistake as you're setting up your data. So it's very, very important that you think through how you want to name your in-app purchases, how you want to bring those things together, your pricing strategies and so on. Don't make it up as you go through the dashboard and make a mistake, because then you're going to create this friction in the experience.
And don't make it difficult on your users so that they have to figure out which places to get cheaper, and so they go to the phone in order to buy the Hyperboost, they go to the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it's really up to us, as it is with everything, right? These are all developer considerations across everything to make it so that it's a good experience for the user. But now the great news is the store fully supports that as well, and you can give those users the experience that they really need.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take a fortune teller to understand that clearly the store is going to get better in the store.
And not just the store, but the tooling now for developers is fully there. And so when you need to build an application that you want to share code, right, and so that you're writing a single block of code and you want to make sure that this goes to both the phone and a Windows project, you can do that. As well as we also have PCLs that now support WinRT APIs, so that you can build out a solution without changing fundamentally all the work you've done so far. Mm-hmm. So you've got a big investment inside Windows Phone Silverlight. Fantastic. Maintain that investment. And now you can start sharing code between using PCLs with the advancement of PCLs. We kind of talked how that is going to be a paradigm shift really across all the development options that developers have now inside the ecosystem. There it is.
Sounds good.
All right. So let's take a 10-minute break. Let's roll back into Module 2, where we'll start talking about the hands-on about sharing XAML and all the different things we can do, because once we have multiple files in multiple locations, developers need to have their thinking caps on to make sure everything works right.
Sounds good.
We're going to take a 10-minute break. We'll see you then. Bye.